You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Bigee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. Ellen, what a great day to have you back in studio. And Samantha, my friend Ellen Little, is here. Hello. Ellen O'Neill.
Very nice.
You know, for 10 years, I had to say the whole thing.
I know. You did good.
So now I have to say Ellen O'Neill.
And it is great to be back. And Samantha, it's great to see you. Congratulations on your new appointment as your, and you started your nonprofit.
Yes, National Advocate of the Year from the National Hemophilia Foundation. So that was awesome. Amazing. And I finally got our paperwork in for our brand new nonprofit. It's going to be called Cultural Community Connection, Inc. Awesome. And we're going to kind of bridge the gap between services and people that need it and not handouts, hands up.
That's awesome. Right. That's wonderful.
So that could we're be a show coming up here.
Yeah, we're proud of her. We're proud of her. And Paul, thank you very much. Our show girls got an award today, Ellen, and I'll let you do the honors of speaking about that.
Really? Okay. We've been on the air for 10 years. Yeah, so we got honored for our 10-year anniversary. Technically, it's been 11 years, but we were at a different radio station. So since we've been here, we've had a great family, great environment. The show has been thriving, so thank you so much to Paul, to all the folks that have anything to do with the station, and of course to you, Sita, who find our amazing guests every week here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Well, I think, you know, everybody has a slogan, right? And mine is, be your own best friend. I am my own best friend, and as such, I find great quality guests to come on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, because I think our show is, you know, it's a lot of fun. It is very unscripted, as we know. Very educational, and it's very informative. And we talk about things here on our show that affects not just our families, but everyone. And so, like today, for example, we're going to have kitchen table topics with our friends from the League of Women Voters. My friend Sue Little is here, and Sue brought with her Joanne Terry. So welcome to the show, girls, ladies, my friends.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, and so they're going to be on the second segment. And you know what? Some of the things they're going to be talking about is near and dear to everyone's heart. Anyone who have a family, anybody who's alive and well and breathing and didn't die from COVID should be interested in the environment and voting rights. And they should be talking about redistricting. And we should be talking about women's health and healthcare in general. And we should be talking about how we can move our country forward by getting people not just to register to vote, but actually check their voters' registration cards, make sure they know where their precinct is, make sure they know if their signature matches. That is not an excuse that if somebody asks you to show an ID that you can't vote.
That's right.
I mean, I understand there's some people that are making it an issue, and I sympathize with them, but at the same time, you have to have a driver's license to drive, mm-hmm. correct?
You have to have a state ID past the age of 40.
You have to have a passport if you want to travel. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. If you live in a certain community and you know that that community has roads, public school, a hospital, waterways,
fire department,
guess what? Somebody's paying for that. We all pay for it through our taxes, and we should. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. You should take it upon yourself. Don't wait on someone else to ask you the day of election day. Is your voter's ID caught up to date? That's your responsibility, correct?
Right. Yes. Yeah. Also, do your research on your candidates.
And the other part, too, about the League of Women Voters is because it's nonpartisan, you can go on that site, and anything that comes up, anything that you're about to vote on, they'll give you that. If you vote yes, this is what that means. If you
they
vote
do their
no.
homework.
So it's a nonpartisan, great place to get fantastic resources, not just for Brevard County, but for the state of Florida.
Well, we're supposed to have a guest calling in today. Her name is Alyssa Gabriel, and she is supposed to be speaking about the empowerment of women. She has proven herself, and she's well-versed in artistic creativity, and she's published over 150 books, and launch the career of so many authors. If she does not call in, this is a great subject for all of us to talk about. So, Ellen, what we can do in the meantime is I want to do a little update about COVID-19. You know, our friend Dr. Tyler Simet, mm-hmm. He put up a post this morning about wearing a mask, and he put up a post this morning about getting vaccinated. So I think everyone should know by now, if you're under 12, you cannot get the vaccine as yet. Mm-hmm. If you're over 12, you can. And we're all in this together. I mean, people are saying, well, the pros and cons is the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. Well, guess what? You're supposed to get the information from your doctor, get the information from the CDC, and you're supposed to make a well-informed decision about your body and your family. Mm-hmm. My family is vaccinated. I work in healthcare, and we're hearing so many people that are having issues with getting vaccinated. And some of the reasons that they're giving us is, well, some people say they're from the Caribbean and they believe in bush tea. Mm. Some people believe in conspiracy theories. You have intelligent people who are saying, well, if I take the vaccine, I'm going to have a chip put into my fingers. And I know that, Sue, you're a pharmacist technician, correct? And,
yes,
and
I am.
You guys administer. And tell us a little bit about what your establishment is doing for the vaccine.
Yeah, we've been giving vaccines quite a bit lately. It's a little bit uptick. Doing a lot of COVID testing, too, though. But we've had some people come in and get the vaccine, even though they're very hesitant. But usually it's because they either work with someone who is immunocompromised and they don't want to get them ill, or they have a family member who has health issues and they are very protective of them. But, you know, as far as adverse effects from the vaccine, we really haven't seen anything other than
a
little soreness, or maybe the next day you just feel like you're coming down with something, and then the next day you're fine. So,
I'll take that. So anyway, but you know what? What gets me is, like, I'm from the Caribbean, and I had this woman literally arguing with me about how she believes in the roots of certain things back home. And I'm trying to say to her, listen, Dr. Fauci from the beginning said, if we're not vaccinated, those of us who are shedding the virus is going to mutate. And we've seen that. It's going to overcrowd the hospitals. We've seen that. We're going to see doctors and nurses frustrated and walking off the jobs. We have seen that. We have seen a shortage of staff now because the children are not wearing their mask in school. And so the children are taking the virus home to their parents and their siblings. And now it's affecting the economy because people are calling in sick. So I think, you know, it is a war on COVID. And it is a war that we are fighting on two fronts. We're fighting the virus, and we're fighting to keep our economy afloat, correct?
And it's sad because a lot of people, especially here where we are, you know, they think that by threatening our officials that have been elected into these positions with whatever their side or their outlook is, it's sad. I tried to go this morning to the school board so I can express my opinion, and I wasn't allowed to because they closed it at 9:30 in the morning, but there was over 100 people there.
Right. Well, I think our guest has just called in. Paul is handling our phones for us, thank God. You have to be quick on this radio when stuff happens.
That's right.
And the thing is, it's not that we don't give people the information. We do. We send everybody the information when to call in and the time to call in, but it does get lost in the shuffle because we get tons and tons of emails from people who wants to come on the show. So anyway, so let's reintroduce our guest. We have a guest who's calling in, and her name is Alyssa. I hope I'm saying it right. Author Alyssa Gabriel. She's going to be speaking with us today about, listen to this, folks, 150 books she's published. She's extremely artistic and creative. And I know we lost a little time with her, so we're going to go right to her on the phone. Good morning, Miss Alyssa, and thank you for calling in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends in sunny Cocoa, Florida.
Oh, sunny Cocoa, Florida. Hi there. It's Alyssa Gabriel, and
Alyssa.
I'm so happy to be on the show with you all today. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you know what? I apologize if you got mixed up with your phone numbers. When we originally send out the emails, we normally send, you know, the number to call in. So I apologize for that. But anyway, what state are you calling in from?
I am actually, today I am in the Pocono Mountains, just getting back from Negril, Jamaica.
Oh my, what? Are you kidding? I'm from Trinidad. You should have taken me with you to Jamaica.
Oh, it's so much fun. The people are just amazing, so pleasant, so creative, just so full of love and light. I had such a wonderful time.
Well, you know, one thing about the island people is, you know, how people say, you know, that they're happy to wake up breathing. The people in the islands actually prove that, because when you wake up in the morning, the sun is shining and it's a bright new day. I mean, you being an author, you could probably write books about every single person you met in Jamaica or the Caribbean.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. It was just phenomenal, a phenomenal experience. Yeah.
So I met you as I do most of our friends on social media, and I'm totally impressed with your background, your knowledge, your creativity, your artistic side. And I want to know a little bit more about you. We were going to read your bio, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in writing and greeting cards and natural hair products and everything else?
Oh, yeah, certainly. So I won't make it a long story, but I'll give you the nuts and bolts of it. My dad was a really amazing man, and he was a jazz musician and a Korean War veteran. He actually produced and recorded 9 albums in his lifetime. And I grew up in North New Jersey, and we lived on the second floor of a 3-family house. And in that apartment, there was a tiny little room in the front of the apartment that we really didn't know what to do with, except to put my dad's piano and his instruments in his room. And we called that his music room, the piano room. So one Saturday morning, I was awakened by a melody that he was playing on the piano. And it got me right up out of the bed. And I walked from my bedroom to his room, and I said, "Dad, what is that song that you're playing?" He said, "This is the new song that I wrote. It's called Peace in the Storm." And the melody was so beautiful, and then he read the words to me, and the words were life-changing and life-transforming, even at the age of 8, and that's the age I was at the time. It was at that time that words and sounds became a really big and important part of my life, and that was at the same time that I started writing. And so I'd like to say that I've been writing for over 30 years now because of Peace in the Storm, the song that my father had written in the early 80s. That's where my writing journey began.
At the age of 8. Where do you find your inspiration for your characters when you write?
Well, it can just be life itself. So let me tell you about one instance in particular. With my book, Eye of the Beholder, it was recommended by USA Today as a romance. And there's a character in there. His name is Jerusalem Jones, and everybody knows him in that book as Jay. And he suffered so many heartaches in his lifetime growing up in North New Jersey. He lost his parents at an early age in his life. And he went on to the military, and he suffered more in the military, ended up being diagnosed with PTSD. And that part of the story I got from my father's life. He went through life not knowing that there was something off. I was able to identify that in him maybe about 10 years before he passed away. And so the character, Jerusalem, is a fictional character. He's a made-up character, but I pulled part of my father's life and existence and breathed that life into that character. So sometimes life can translate into art, but I can be sparked by anything, can be inspiration. And most writers will tell you that anything can, it just happens to be something that may be like magic, or may just be like a light bulb going off that will enlighten us. And then that's when we'll have our creativity sparked, and we put pen to pad at that point.
Right. I think you are very blessed, because I just want to tell our listening audience, we're speaking with Ms. Elisa Gabriel, and you are an award-winning publisher, author, screenwriter, producer, brand ambassador, and a certified natural health professional, and you're also a life coach. My goodness, when do you find a time to fit all these things in? I mean, where do you get this energy from, Miss Elisa? Because we need more Elisas in our world today that goes out and mentors other people and hold them by the hand and show them the way things are done. Because right now we're seeing in our world, there's so much negativity. We need more positive people like you. Tell us a little bit about how do you do it?
Well, you know, it's effective time management. It's serving a higher purpose. So in life, if we have the courage to identify a why, and that why can change over time, but if you have a foundation that's built on a really strong why, you will find the time to do everything that your life is purposed to do. So my why happens to be honoring my parents, honoring my children, and honoring my husband. My why never changes. So that keeps me motivated. Another part of my why is being for others what I needed when I was growing up, or being for others what I know I can provide. And that's a big purpose. So I find the time because the why and the purpose is greater than I am. Having a great schedule, having balance where some days I don't do anything, having days Monday through Friday where I tackle different things on different days. So it's not really that hard to do. It just takes a lot of focus and not forgetting the reason why I do what I do.
Elisa, what is your writing process?
You know, writing is interesting at this point in my life. I returned to school later in life, so I've been doing a lot of scientific writing over the years, the last few years. I am now getting back into creative writing. So that's hard to blend the two.
Yeah.
So I take, when it's time to write creatively, I sit down in a quiet space. I might have a glass of red wine. I put on jazz. That's my first love. And I let the words come to me. I let the characters talk to me. And then I start writing.
Sounds like we should all be. Sounds like we should all be there with you in that room with that glass of wine, listening to jazz and a glass of wine. I'm thinking, gee, where's my seat?
You know, it's part of self care.
Yeah.
Listening to jazz and having a glass of red wine is part of self care. I promise you that. But that's how I write, and that can last an hour a day. It can fade away, and it won't come back until the next month. It just depends on what is happening in my life. I can write for 12 hours straight, or I might take off 3 or 4 months. I'm one of those writers that when the spirit moves me, then I write creatively.
Right. Well, my friend Ellen, who is one of our co-hosts here, she's also a coach, and I remember a long time ago, Ellen had given me some advice, and I never forgot what she said. I was thinking about quitting my job as a nurse and take it from there. Ellen, what did you tell me to do when I said, oh, I don't know if I should continue working as a nurse because I can retire now. I'm financially stable.
So I said two things. I said, first of all, insurance.
Yeah, health
that
insurance.
That was the first thing. Looked right at you. Well, and the second thing is, it's one of the things that you're passionate about. You love
nursing.
Nursing. And God forbid I say it because I'm getting to be that age. Old people.
Yeah.
You love the elderly. You love taking care of them and hearing their stories and being enriched by them. And I just see every time you tell me a story about one of the patients that you've had, how much it means to you.
Right. And so, you also said that nursing was my steady stream of income.
Totally steady.
Right. So, Elisa, if somebody wants to get a hold of you for public speaking or to speak about your books, do you have a website or somewhere that we can find you? Because you are an amazing human being, and we're so blessed to have you calling on our show. You are just brilliant and beautiful, and my God, so creative. I can't believe it when I read your bio about how many things you are doing. So give us your website.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. So the website is elisagabrielle.com, and that's ELISSAGABRIELLE.com. And then I like to tell people that I'm Google-licious. And so if you just Google Elisa Gabrielle, you'll find me, and you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm accessible.
Well, let's just say, since my two friends are here from the League of Women Voters of the Space Coast, if they wanted you to come one day and give a speech to us ladies about empowerment and motivation and your creativity and your artistic side. I'll throw in a little curry chicken for that for myself. Would you be willing to come down and give us a good little speech?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm there for the curry chicken as well.
Yeah. So you
absolutely.
So you have also been mentioned in like on the Huffington Post and publications like that. Tell us a little bit about the challenges that you face being as successful as you are.
That's a good question. Challenges. I'd like to maybe take the word challenge out of it and just say obstacles.
Yes.
And overcoming obstacles can be quite motivating. So I don't like to say challenges, although I've had them. I'm now say these are obstacles that I've had to overcome and objections that I've had to overcome. But what lies on the other side of those objections and those hurdles is victory. So I think that when we use the word challenges, it can be self-defeating to a degree. So I use the word obstacles and hurdles, and it's something that I just need to overcome, an objection that I need to overcome, and what is on the other side is that victory. Now, I will tell you, in some areas of my life, and this is not a crutch, it's just the truth, being a woman of color has created some obstacles for me that I've had to overcome. So I've had to work 3-4 times as hard to get to certain places. And being an independent publisher has created some obstacles that I've had to overcome. But let me tell you what's on the other side of that. Being able to have the freedom to do things the way that I have wanted to do it has balanced out any challenge that has come as far as publishing is concerned. I've been able to do so many things as an independent publisher that has gotten me a lot of recognition, and so that's that victory. In other areas of my life where I've had to overcome, the victory is in what I just mentioned, USA Today. They haven't had too many cases of independent publishers and independent writers that they have recommended, in particular, a woman of color. So that's that overcoming obstacles that lead to the victory type of scenarios. So we can use the word challenge, but I want us to also view challenges in life as
an obstacle. I love it. And, you know, I've learned something. I love it. I've learned something new from you today, because as you speak, I can see these obstacles in a path. And you're just clearing the path, because at the end of the path, there's something waiting there for you. And that's the victory. And I love it.
Yes, I
love the way you said that. So you're also producing a documentary called Unheard Voices.
Yes. That is what a good friend of mine, Tasha Mills, her son, at the age of 17, was convicted and sentenced to life without parole, 40 years, at the age of 17. And she turned her pain into purpose, and she realized that there are so many women across the country that have children like her child, who has been sentenced to astronomical years where they lose their freedom. They're basically babies going to jail. And what about the mother and the father's pain in all of this and the laws that need to be changed? So she has taken so much of her energy, her time, her effort to turn her pain of her story into purpose to help other mothers who are in the same situation as she is. She's crisscrossed the country, almost died of COVID while doing so, to bring a lot of awareness and light to what is happening with our babies in the criminal justice system. So I have partnered with her to be a producer on this project, which is something that is of utmost importance. It crosses racial lines and age, and it's a universal story that needs to be told.
Well, we thank you for that. And I also noticed you also got the Publisher of the Year Award for the 16th Annual African American Literary Award. You know, we have 1 minute to go. And Ellen, what a great segment. I wish I could have you back on, Elisa, another time closer to the documentary.
Sure.
We're going to have Keith Buchamp, I think, calling in from New York to speak about the documentary that he did with Emmett Till. And I think he's doing something with Oprah about that coming up soon. And he's going to be calling in November. And I'll have you on maybe in December to talk a little bit about your documentary. Because I think women like us, women of color, American women, women of the world, all of us who have a voice, as we get older and bolder and wiser, we have to use our voice for the common good.
Yes,
yes,
we do.
Absolutely, we do. And so I'm in total agreement with you there.
Thank you so much for calling in. We are out of time, unfortunately. These times go so quickly. But we appreciate your insight, and we love hearing about all your successes. But we're going to go to a station break right now with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We'll be right back after these messages.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast urgent care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Champion Home Healthcare, keeping your loved one happy, healthy, and at home. Available at 321-306-2551. Once again, 321-306-2551. Champion Home Healthcare is ACHC accredited and licensed, Medicare certified, and a TRICARE provider. Champion Home Healthcare, 306-2551.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere, Miss Ellen.
Yes, on 1510 WWBC, and our website is under construction right now. It's going to be SitaMediaInc.com. You'll be able to get all of our shows the last 10 years. Congratulations, Sita Begee, 10 years on the radio.
Thank you. And Sammy, you learned something from the first segment, you said.
Yes, I did. I like that Googlicious. And I also have put on there detailed steps on our Viewpoint with Sita and Friends page so that you can find us on demand and download us.
And now we have our second segment with Joanne Terry. And Joanne is currently volunteering as a member on the board of the League of Local Government for the League of Women Voters here in Space Coast, and you're originally from Los Angeles. I had no idea you were from Los Angeles. I don't know why. I just thought you were right here, from, well, like all of us from Florida. And then we have Susan, who is also representing the League of Women Voters Space Coast, South Florida Working Group. So both of you are here. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So we're going to start off with Susan. Sue Little. I don't know why I always mix up everybody's name, and I shouldn't. Too many people. 10 years of shows, different people every Monday. It's hard to keep up with all the people, right?
2 to 3 different people every Monday.
Yes. So Sue, tell us, how did you get involved with the League of Women Voters?
Well, I had 3 kids in high school, and I thought, I'm going to need something to do after they graduate and leave. And so I had a friend who was a member of the League of Women Voters. So she got me to go to a meeting, and I joined up right then and there because I just liked what they were saying, and I needed to know more about the politics of Florida because I'd been here for a number of years and was really completely lost, and they helped me immensely. And I've always been interested in natural resources from back when I was in college.
No relation to Ellen right here, right? She's
no,
got that nothing.
No.
No. Married into the little family.
Yeah.
So did I.
So I know. Why do you think, Joanne, that the League of Women Voters is supposed to be nonpartisan? How can we get that message out to more people that it is nonpartisan? Because I find people sometimes get lost, and they're like, "No, I don't think it is," but it is.
Yes, the League of Women Voters is completely nonpartisan, and one of the commitments is to try to educate voters on both sides of the issue. So you'd mentioned earlier, we talked about during election seasons, the Vote 411 tool online, where you can actually go and look at the pros and cons for every issue. You can look at the bios for every candidate. So really what we're doing is we're promoting educated and involved participation in our democracy without regard to party.
Right. And Sue, so we need more people to volunteer with the League of Women Voters. We need more people to sign up to become a member. And we also need more people to get on the committees, correct?
Yes,
so,
we do.
And
yes.
How do we do that here in Brevard County, Florida? Because I know a lot of people who are retired, and they could give an hour a month, an hour every other month. And it's just as we are doing the best to get the information out. But what would you say to people who are saying, well, I can't because I don't have the time?
Well, we
make the time.
You do make the time and it's scary to go out and volunteer with a bunch of people that you don't know. So we do try to hold meet and greets about 2 or 3 times a year. It's been very difficult with COVID because a lot of our meet and greets have been on Zoom, which is still tricky. But you can always join us for one of those. We have one coming up October 25th. I think it's October 25th. I wasn't prepared to talk about that today, but yes.
Yeah, but it's okay. You know, at least we can get the information
out. And that will be on Zoom.
That we're still open for business, even if
we are still open for business. That is true. And we, you know, we do different things. Like if we'll do a voter drive where we're signing up people to, or we're registering people to vote, we do it in shifts, too, so it might be 2 hours, 2 hours, 2 hours or something.
Right.
So you don't have to donate a
and
whole bunch
people,
of time.
You meet people, you talk, you make friends. So let's talk about some of the things that you two are working on. So, Joanne, Terry, what are you working on with the League of Women Voters right now that we could share with our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends?
Sure. So the two things that I'm focusing on as part of the local government committee is our current county redistricting and our current county charter review. So redistricting is by far the most urgent, as it's happening in the next couple of months. And the committee is meeting to actively look at the census data and redraw our county commission lines. And you know, anybody who's interested in getting involved with that can go to our website. The League of Women Voters Space Coast website is lwvsc.clubexpress.com. And then also the county rechartering, county charter review. So every 6 years, Brevard County, we go through our charter and see if there's anything that we might add or change. And there's a committee for that. So we right now, we're following both of those and trying to educate the public and get more people involved.
And if I remember correctly, the U.S. Census is required under the U.S. Constitution to occur every 10 years. And the process of counting every resident in the country every 10 years? Is that
when
we do it? Right.
Yes.
And I don't think people understand how important it is why we should fill out our census. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because it is about representation.
It's about representation. It's also about funding, because a lot of the funding, like for education and for programs, for social programs, should I just take this off?
Yeah.
For social programs, depends on how many people and how many kids and are in your neighborhood. And so it's incredibly important. And even at the county level, the district funds are split up by districts and how many people are in the districts and where the money is needed for roads and for infrastructure projects. So it is very important to get counted.
Right. And it's not that important. It's not that difficult. I remember my children coming home from school and they would bring home that form in their book bags to how many people are in your household, what's your annual income,
right,
and stuff like that. And I wonder why, I don't know where we're missing the mark on that, but a lot of people don't return the census. And it's as simple as going online and filling it out, or it's as simple as filling out the form when you get a return it to your children's school.
That's true. And especially when it is online and you can do it online, but I do want to be clear that the next opportunity is in 10 years. So, it is over and done
It's done with, yeah.
And the results are being published now to be used for redistricting both at the state and the local levels.
So people who didn't fill out the census don't really have a leg to stand on if they're complaining about resources coming into their community because they didn't fill it out. A lot of people are saying, well, I didn't fill it out because I didn't know about it, I didn't get it on time, and it's excuse, excuse, excuse. You know,
I absolutely agree. And so maybe those are lessons learned. So
right.
The people will be more
apt to fill it out
in
10 years. Right. And so, Sue, and you're working. So is that all you're doing? You're doing redistricting in the census.
Yes. And I help Sue.
And you help Sue. So, Sue, and you are doing something that's near and dear to our heart here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We talked about the Indian River Lagoon. We talk about the environment. So tell us a little bit about what your work, which committee you're on and what you're working on.
Well, I'm the co-chair of the Natural Resource Committee, and as such, one of my duties is to keep track of what's going on with the Save Our Indian River Lagoon sales tax that we all voted on several years ago. So I just wanted to mention a couple of things that was in the latest Citizens Oversight Committee meeting. For one thing, Virginia Barker always gives a very good detailed update every month about what's going on, what have they done for the last month, how many contracts they have coming up for the next month, and so on. So they keep very good track of the money every month. But one thing she mentioned was that there were several organizations around that needed volunteers. One of them was the zoo. They need some volunteers to do help with clam bed restoration in the lagoon. That's actually a project that is funded by the Indian River Lagoon National Estuary Program. They're starting in December, and they're going to have 100 sites along the lagoon where they're going to put in clam beds. And then at 10 of those sites, they're going to put in grass mats in April of 2022. Somewhere between the clam bed and the shore, because they've noticed that in other restoration projects that they've done, that seagrass has come in voluntarily between the beds and the shore, and they think it's because the clam beds, cut down on the wave action a little bit, and that the seagrass is able to take hold. So they're going to try and help it along, okay?
Yeah.
There. So they need volunteers, and anybody that's interested in volunteering for that project should go to, or should email A. Reardon, it's AREARDEN, at brevardzoo.org.
Yeah. And we're also noticing, right now, climate change is affecting all of us. I mean, what else can we do to educate people about the effects of climate change? I mean, we're watching even people on the southern border when they come in. Climate change is a factor.
Yes,
it is. So, what else can we do to tell people, like, this is not a made-up story. This is something happening, and it's man-made as well. Most of it is. I mean, people just don't wake up every day and think about where their food come from. or what's in the water behind their home, what kind of water they're drinking, what are they putting into their bodies. What is it about us, the five of us in this room, that makes us tick and think about it and others don't?
Boy, I wish I had an answer to that. Yeah. I don't, you know, I mean, the new report out from the IPCC on climate change pretty much spells it right out, that it is humans that are causing at least 70% of the change in the climate at this point. And we've just seen that huge storm hit New Orleans. Yes, it probably would have hit New Orleans anyway, but it may not have been as strong as it was if the water wasn't as warm as it was.
Right, as severe, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I there's so many people that are anti-science, anti-environment, anti-global warming, and they tell, and it's like the people with the loudest voices who have the most misinformation, they seem to get heard sometimes. And it bothers me that the people like us who are seeing it and reading and understanding science and what's happening, we are not. So I wonder, I mean, there are programs in our schools to help with this, correct? The children learn about the environment, the Indian River Lagoon and the oysters.
Yes. They used to be able to go to the lagoon itty bitty and learn the importance of the lagoon and how to treat it good. And I got yelled at by my kid a couple of times for not doing something the right way when he was little. Mom, you're going to kill the lagoon. I'm like, oh, great, great field trip. But it actually woke up that little first grader to don't let mom put this down the sink or don't let mom throw this out the car window. So I had a little environmentalist riding around with me in my car.
Right. I have the same experience with my son-in-law right now because I'm a big recycler. I mean, I literally will wash out plastic bags and reuse them or put them, you know, somewhere. And my son-in-law came up from Miami and he just lived in a big condo and didn't understand that recycling bin. And so now, after all these months, he comes and he says to me, you know, I've started washing out things because I think of you all the time.
Yeah, I had a friend.
He changed one.
Yeah, so yeah. It's just the people that you know and the people that you know.
Well, Ellen said that she was watching the kind of shampoo she uses and what kind of bottles there were. I remember Ellen saying that, right? Ellen, you said something about the wastewater.
Well, just in general, the stuff that you put on your body has like so many chemicals in it. You don't even realize it until you start looking at the side of the bottle. So now I went all natural with everything, with hair products, with soaps, with all of those things. I'm very cautious about what goes down the drain at all. You
know? I had a friend that told me she went vegetarian, well, pescatarian, because when she read about how much water it takes for the cows to drink and what happens with the environment with them, she decided she was not going to eat red meat anymore. And she spread that information to other people, and she gives them the information. She literally walks around with it on her phone. The effects of global warming when it comes to animals. And she's changed a lot of people's lives in that you live by example. You set an example, like you're saying with your son-in-law. And I think it's good. But, I mean, it's just that I don't think people ties global warming into economic prosperity. So how do we tie that in, Sue?
I did want to make a comment, mm-hmm. just back up a little bit, that it's become political. You know, climate change has become political just like COVID has become political. So the louder you yell the science at people,
they don't want to
hear it. But now tying it back into economics,
that's it,
may be a way to do it, because heat waves, first of all, heat waves actually kill more people than any other natural phenomenon every year. And they're just getting worse, okay? It's not economical to have an airplane sitting on the tarmac somewhere because the tarmac has melted and they can't roll the plane out. It's not economical when everyone turns their air conditioner on and the power plant can't handle it and it blows the generators.
There's your ad.
Blowed
you need to
their
make an ad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or food. It's not economical if you can't have crops because it's too hot. And
it's already in Florida, all of our agricultural crops are already being grown at above their optimal temperature for growth, okay? So it won't take much more before they'll have to switch to entirely new crops, and our food will be coming from longer distances, which again creates more carbon dioxide in the air and a hardship. And people won't be able to work in the fields. I can't even imagine working in the fields at 90 degrees, let alone 100 or 110 somewhere out west. What, have they hit 127 this year?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
I know. And every time you have a salad and you look at that mix of greens in there, I don't know why, but I always think about, well, who picked these radishes? Who picked these lettuce? Who picked the cucumbers? Who picked the tomatoes? It's just a natural thing in my brain. And I say a prayer for that person that actually worked in a field somewhere and picked it so that it can be shipped to the United States or trucked from state to state or whatever. And I think if you start thinking in terms of everything is built by a human or picked by a human or grown by a human, you start thinking about humanity as a whole. Like you said about the air conditioning, that is so true. What happens if everyone decided to turn the ACs down because it's so hot? Mm-hmm. Then what happens to the grid? Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know, you know, how we don't think about it, but I like that the League of Women Voters are focusing on issues like the environment, education, climate change, immigration. Well, let's touch a little bit about what happens with families during this immigration crisis on the borders. We know that global warming is partly why a lot of them are coming to the border. We know that's one of it. We also know that violence against women and children. We know the drug trade. We know people are reproducing so much and they cannot take care of their children. And I know the league is big on women's rights. What are we doing? Do we have a committee for that? Women's rights and in general, violence against women?
Well, we do have a social justice committee that deals with a lot of it. It deals with health of women and girls and you know, everyone actually, but they do have an emphasis on health of women and girls. But they also have a big emphasis right now on the justice system itself and trying to learn as much as they can and trying to influence the lawmakers as much as they can to make it more fair and equitable. So climate change is something that we're having a difficult time kind of getting into the league's mainstream. You know, I do belong to I represent the Space Coast League in the South Florida Working Group, which is an organization of different leagues, and that is one of our main focuses is climate change, because of course Miami and South have been very much affected by it, just by sea level rise, but also because of heat, because that's where the agriculture in Florida mostly is.
And that sounds to me like the most humanitarian crisis in the making, because when it gets hot, we hear the complaints.
Yes.
I mean, we can't even take our residents out of the nursing home to sit outside on the porch because it's so hot. And so I think when you start putting a human face on what's happening with climate, then people can say, okay, I'm getting it now. You know, but I don't know what else
we
can do.
But what's sad is that you have a generation. Everybody likes to complain about millennials, but I'll give it to them. They care about their environment. They drive their Priuses. They watch their carbon intakes, their footprint on this planet. And they're literally like a butt of a joke on a constant basis. Because my sister is one of those tree huggers. She eats right. She, you know, she is. She's really
I'm a
like,
tree hugger.
She drives her
And they make decisions about family. They make decisions how many children they're going to have.
Yes, because she's 29. They still have not had a child. She doesn't want a child. She moved in a pod to avoid wasting gas. Like, her entire move was planned around the planet and how she could leave a footprint.
And people make fun of her.
So it's like, you have this age group that wants to make a change, then you have these other, like you said, it becomes a left and right issue where, no, that's
too
not
political.
The problem. This is a human problem.
So what I'm hearing, Sue and Joanne, is it's more or less like, in order for humanity to survive, everybody needs a fair start. So we'll start with Joanne. How do we encourage people to think about what is a fair start for a child? What are the things a parent should be thinking about when they bring this child into the world? Because it goes right along with all the issues that the league is working on.
Well, certainly. And I think, you know, I think that it's still very much natural for young people to want to procreate the race, right? I mean, it's the way we're built, right?
Conditioned.
To want the race to continue. And so I think, you know, it's very important to make sure that your children have that education, when they're growing up, you know, and it is a little bit, it's tricky because, you know, parents have a certain way of thinking and then they're going to pass that on to their kids, right? And so there's, it really needs to be a lot of various experiences and exposures, which is why I'm so big on public schools, like, for example, right? Because you get a lot of exposure to other people, you get that social interaction, you get interaction of ideas, and you teach your kids how to think for themselves, not just parrot back what, you know, they've been taught.
And it's cultural, too.
Absolutely cultural.
Because you mix with so many people from different backgrounds and different walks of life.
Exactly. And I was just telling to Sue on the way here, the differences that I experienced from growing up in a city like Los Angeles to coming here to Melbourne is like, it was a
night
reality,
and day.
A reality
oh,
shift.
Yeah.
Because you get into your own little world and you think everybody is thinking like you are. And where you grow up and where you're from and where you live is so key to how you see the world. And so to be able to expand people's knowledge of, just like you said, you know, try to see things from other people's perspectives. Try to see it in not a negative way, but just in an informational way to form more balanced opinions about what's really going on.
And so what do you think we lost the essence of to agree to disagree? Because it used to be exactly like that I could say that I like my curry chicken and my friend could say I like barbecue chicken. She can say she likes it with corn, and I say I like my curry with rice. But you sit down and you share that food together, and you come out best friends. My friend Marsha Kelly in Indiana, which is the truth. That's how we met. But, I mean, where did we lose that? So every single, I mean, where in mass became political? Climate change became political. And it's like certain code words people use when they're running for office has become like click. So where did we lose that where people just decided I'm not going to listen to the other side?
Wow. You asked me the tough questions. Well, you know, I honestly think I take this back to you think back when you were, well, you didn't grow up in the States, but.
I came when I was 20.
You came when you
were 20.
Okay.
Yeah.
So everything has gotten so much more expensive. So families don't have, I mean, they're usually both breadwinners. The parents are both breadwinners. And if you're a single parent, oh my gosh, it's even worse.
You're working 3-4 jobs.
Yes, you're working 3 or 4 jobs and, you know, you don't have that quality time with your kids as much as you would have wanted.
Right. It's been a shift, a definite shift.
It's definite shift.
Cultural shift.
And I think that some of it is coming back. I see a lot more younger parents now where one of the two of them is staying home. I think that's a wonderful idea.
That's a dad.
I know when I graduated from college in the middle 70s, it was, and we discussed this before, it was almost expected that both parents would work, okay?
Yes.
Whether you wanted to or not, you know, it was expected of you that both of you would work. I'm all for women's rights and men's rights, but if one of you wanted to stay home, I think that expectation was a little too high that both of you were.
And the other thing we see too is there's so much money in politics, and elections should not be about big money interest and super PACs. It really should be about people representing our democracy. And when elected into office, you look out for everyone, even the people who didn't vote for you. And I think that's one of the biggest problem we have right now is the money in politics. Because if there wasn't so much big money into it, just maybe that person running for office will sit down and have a town hall style meeting in the open and listen to ideas from all the constituents and come up with a reasonable way of thinking. That is something I love that the League of Women Voters does. It also looks at the super PACs and try to get the money out of politics if we can.
Right. Yes. Right? Yeah.
You know, so I love that we're doing that. So the League of Women Voters, we work on, we try to educate people on education, the environment, money in politics, immigration. We also work on that. Are we doing anything right now in Florida to help with the people on the border? The League is working on helping anyone politically, or maybe
for the Cuban crisis?
That would be a state league thing, and I'm not familiar
with
the, so the league is in tiers. So there's the League of Women Voters of the U.S., the League of Women Voters of Florida, and then we're the League of Voters of the Space Coast. And,
right.
and there's many leagues around Florida. And so we support the state and the and national, but we but a lot of our focus on the committees is local.
Yeah, and I get so much emails from the league, from all different ones.
Yes.
It's like, I can't figure out who's doing, but I know you guys are working on the zoo and in the Indian River Lagoon right. and the things locally here for us. So give us the website if somebody wanted to go on and Google the league and maybe join, become a volunteer, join a committee. There's so many committees that need people. I know that too.
Yes. And the more people we have, the more work we can do.
Yeah. So. Do you have the website with you or phone
it's, number? It's www.lwv. I've got it. Okay, so it's www.lwvscclubexpress.com.
So I just have a question from somebody to talk a little bit, if we can, about gerrymandering and why we oppose that. Do you want to take that one with the redistricting, Joanne?
Sure.
What does that actually mean when somebody say that they're gerrymandering?
So just very briefly, gerrymandering in its purest form is basically trying to draw congressional or state local representation boundary lines to favor political parties or to disparage communities of color or political parties or religion or anything that is not considered to be, you know, basically arbitrary and fair. And so the League of Women Voters, I think at all levels, supports the Fair Districts Initiative that is watching to make sure that at every level the redistricting is done in a fair way to ensure that no particular party or group of people have any kind of an advantage or a disadvantage.
Right. And for you, Sue, as citizens of the world, we must protect our planet from physical, economic, and public health effects of climate change. Talk a little bit, if you can, for a minute or so, about the economic prosperity of global, of what happens when we don't pay attention to our environment. What are some of the detriments that happen when people are not paying attention to the environment that affects us economically?
Well, the big one is the availability of nutritious food. If kids don't get enough to eat, then they're not going to learn as well. If you don't get enough to eat, you're not going to be as productive at your job. It affects productivity all along the line. Like I said, you can't. It's not economic to have the tarmac melt and planes can't land or take off, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of, or have the power outages. There's, and also, like I said before, the heat waves kill more people than any other natural phenomenon. But it's not just the heat, it's the fact that even at night, it doesn't cool down enough to let bodies recover. So there's a lot of sickness that doesn't actually kill people, but it does affect whether you can go to work or not.
So very interesting. And why we should go to the League of Women Voter meetings, because we get to meet interesting folks like you that have a topic and something to talk about that's not necessarily so like tension-oriented,
no,
right?
It's great
to
learn.
Stuff
it's
that we, yeah, we all learn about these types of things. So thank you once again, Sita, for three fantastic guests, actually, two topics. And we will be here next week here at 1 o'clock right here on AM 1510 WWBC.